I'm Hillary.
And I'm Sandra. Coming up on the Quick and the Dirty podcast, we are going to talk to Becca Atkinson. She is the host of The Unashamed Alcoholic. It's a brand new podcast that she just started recording recently after telling the world her story of alcoholism.
Her story is really interesting because when you look at the sheer amount of alcohol she was drinking, it didn't seem out of control. But maybe this podcast is going to make you think about your own consumption of alcohol, and are you really okay with it?
The Quick and the Dirty Podcast with Hillary Welch and Sandra Plagakis.
So today we're going to talk to Becca Atkinson about being an unashamed alcoholic and her journey to becoming sober. But she's not the only one giving things up because it's January. So lots of people doing the dry January. But Sandra, you're a miserable bitch. Why?
Because I've given up carbs.
Well, I mean, you're always a miserable bitch, but...
Right. I feel like, yeah. My instinct is to argue with you until I actually listen to what you said. And I'm like, no, that's bang on. We're in a goddamn pandemic. We're housebound, basically. It's dry January and I have to lose my COVID weight. So, and I went to see my gynecologist recently, who reminded me that I'm a middle-aged woman and losing weight is extra hard for me because my metabolism is a piece of shit. So, she told me that you have to eat like very little. So I'm basically eating about 1100 calories a day because I have to leave room for all the alcohol that I want to consume. Becca. Sorry.
And we all make sacrifices, right?
I have to, right? So I'm doing this low carb, not quite keto, but just like low carb, no sugar, low calorie. And I'm losing literally a pound a week. And it's like all this work for such a little payoff, Hillary. Fuck being middle-aged. It sucks.
But you're doing the right things. Like, it's just a means to an end. And then you can gain it all back and do this all over again.
I know. It's a cycle of life, isn't it? You put it on, you take it off, you promise that it's going to be different next time, and then it isn't. And then you give yourself a scolding, you cry a little, get on the scale, vow to do better, and it all begins again.
I am myself am doing like a little bit of an internal freak out because like I think a lot of people, I've gained some weight over COVID. When I say some, and I'm freaking out because pretty soon we're going to start talking about heading back to work and like seeing real people. And this presents a problem. The initial reveal.
We're all feeling it though, but that's the nice thing. This pandemic has been a great equalizer. We've all gained weight. So we're all coming back a little bit heavier. The forgiveness level is high. And as soon as the gyms open again and life goes back to being normal, hopefully sometime this year, we'll all just lose weight together. And that'll be the only thing we fucking talk about with each other, is what I think. Like my goal is to, I was on a diet right before the pandemic started. And I didn't gain weight for the first half of the pandemic. And then I did because of some hormones that I went on and went off of, and it messed my whole body up. And it's 10 pounds, Hillary. It's just 10 stupid pounds that I can't get off of me right now. But this is the COVID 10 that I'm getting off. And once I can get that off, then I start the real diet. So it's like, so when everybody gets back, it'll be like, I never, you know, got any heavier, but I still had a lot of weight to lose. So, you know, it's like, damn it.
All I can think of,
don't
like,
feel bad about
when we get back and everybody is still doing like sober time. I'm actually thankful because dry January is while you're at home, because if I had to be around people who were doing dry January and I was doing no carbs, there would be some serious HR problems at work.
Right. See, I could do no car. Right. Exactly. What a humorless, miserable fucking world we live in right now, where it's dry January, there are no carbs, and we have to stay at home.
And it's just winter, and it's awful.
It's awful. Even my youngest son the other day was saying it's too cold to even really do anything outside right now here in Ottawa, anyway. And it's like a cruel joke. And he's underage, so he can't even get into the booze. Again, sorry, Becca.
And normally I'd like to say, like, let's be miserable together, except we can't right. be together. We
can't even be together. No, it's just, it's vicious and it's awful. But, I mean, we'll get through it, right? And Hillary, don't beat yourself up about the weight gain, because I know that you and I both have the exact same sensibilities when it comes to our weight and our body image and all of those things. Please don't, because you are so beautiful. And I will motorboat you at any size.
Well, they are much more luscious these days.
We talk about sex and relationships a lot on the Quick and the Dirty podcast, but I don't think we have ever talked about alcoholism and its effect on relationships. Today, we welcome Becca Atkinson. She is the host of The Unashamed Alcoholic. It's a brand new podcast that she started right after she came out as an alcoholic in September. So I'm excited to welcome Becca Atkinson. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Becca. Thanks so much for joining us
How
today.
Are you?
So let's just get a little bit of your backstory to start. You call yourself the unashamed alcoholic. How did you become an alcoholic, and when did you decide that enough was enough?
Yeah, well, I think I've noticed my drinking habits were quite different than a lot of other people. Probably in my 20s, I started noticing that. I had to be the one going out. Like, there was no option of not drinking on a weekend or if I was around people. Like, every event, I had to be drinking. So I started to notice that not everyone had the same approach to alcohol that I did. And then after I had kids, it really became more prominent because I was putting it before them. So if, you know, I didn't want to do bedtime in the evening because it was interrupting, you know, coming back down and drinking wine. So that's when, as soon as it wasn't about just me anymore, that's when I started to realize that this is really running my life, not the other way around. This is the dominant force. So when I woke up in Toronto after my grandmother's funeral in 2017, and I was the most hungover I've ever been in my life, you know, as you are after a funeral party, right? So I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I was just so sick. That was like really the breaking point. I was just, it'd been a long time, years at that point, that I'd been trying to moderate and knew I had a problem. But that was really the breaking point. And a month after that, I stopped. So that was 3.5 years ago.
3.5 years ago. And, you know, I've heard that about alcoholics, that there's you almost have to hit rock bottom and have to hit that lowest point in your life for something to change.
Absolutely.
So do you, you know, waking up with that god-awful hangover, do you consider that day a blessing?
Yes, absolutely. And I think there's a few points of that. You know, that was kind of like the wake-up call, like, I can't live like this anymore. I shouldn't be, you know, feeling this terrible after a funeral. Like, there were so many things wrong with that scenario.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there is a few points, you know, that not wanting to, you know, go through like this lengthy bedtimes with the kids, like, you know, putting, you know, thinking I can't go out and drive tonight because then I can't drink, you know, all these things that, you know, trying to moderate the weeks I spent trying to moderate, I'll only drink on, you know, Friday and Saturday night, you know, and just the time that put into it was all built up into a few key moments where I just thought, I'm so sick of thinking about drinking and planning drinking.
How long had you been drinking? Like, you talked about your relationship with alcohol when you were younger. And I mean, to be fair, Becca, I think most young people have a terrible relationship with alcohol, and it's based mm-hmm. on binge drinking and parties. And you know how it is. We all know how mm-hmm. it is to be young. You go to the Kegers and I don't know anyone who hasn't been a binge drinker at least once in their young life.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that evolve and change to become a daily drinker? You know, what was the point where you were like, yeah, I'll just drink tonight. I'll have, you know, how did it progress?
Yeah, I think, as a, you know, like in my teens, I started drinking and it was the curiosity of it. Right. And like, oh, you can go out. No, I can use a fake ID to get in here. And, you know, I think I got a little taste of adventure with it. And then in my 20s, you know, you go through university, whatever, and everyone's drinking. That's the other thing is you're strange. You're the odd man out if you're not drinking in those years.
That's right.
Right. So there's a whole part of that that I think we need to maybe examine a little more. But once I graduated and was living in Ottawa and working my first job, and had roommates, I noticed that like I was drinking every night and they weren't. And I thought, why aren't you? You know, like we can. You're an adult now. You're on your own. You're free. No one's watching. You can do whatever you want. And they didn't have to. And it was like I had to. So I know that's when I kind of was like, okay, something's different here.
And then when did your attitude around that start to change when you started to realize that that wasn't who you wanted to be? Because I'm sure it wasn't just you woke up from a hangover one day and that was the day. You'd probably been thinking about it for some time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought, you know, a lot of it comes back to the kids and what I wanted to show them. And I think back to, you know, my childhood and in the family, like as I got sober, I realized like, oh, all these people in my family had drinking problems that no one talked about, right? So like you realize that as you get a little older, you go, oh, that's why that person, you know, was in the hospital or whatever, but it wasn't talked about. And I thought, I think we need to start talking about this a little more. And so I started being open about it, but really it was going to meetings and starting in my recovery that's when I was like, I don't want to, you know, be that person anymore. I need to, and you naturally start changing as a person once you're in recovery and reflecting on all your decisions and behaviors and character defects of, you know, the alcoholism or the addiction, and you just naturally start to change. So that's, I mean, it was really, and that was 3 months after I stopped drinking, I started, you know, participating in a program that really helps you have that self-reflection.
When you say that you knew you had a drinking problem, how much were you drinking a night? What was your average?
So I think that's a really good question, because a lot of people are like, oh, you must have been, like you say alcoholic and you're like, oh, so you're drinking before you go to work in the morning, or, you know, you're having blackouts every night. And, you know, it's so personal though, that the quantity that what it takes to be an alcoholic, like it's not, there isn't some magic thing. And that's why we used to Google, like, how do you know if you're an alcoholic? Like,
right.
Why am I drinking, you know, and read all these books like, oh, well, this person's, you know, Sarah Heppala has a book called Blackout. And I thought, oh, well, she's blacking out. Of course she's an alcoholic. I'm not, that's not me, but you know, I still am. And it came down to, I was drinking probably 3 glasses of wine a night, you know, on weeknight. And then a little more on weekends. This is in my late last years with, you know, being more of a like wife and mother and, you know, you're not going out and partying all the time. In my 20s, I was drinking like, you know, maybe a beer or two on weekdays, and then like definitely getting belligerently drunk, going out every like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, sometimes Sunday type thing. So those were like the 20s were definitely the heavier drinking period, but it wasn't necessarily about quantity. It was just that it
frequency
was what I thought.
It was just
all
frequency,
yeah.
That you always had to have a glass,
exactly.
In your hand, regarding how many. Yeah, regardless of how many. You know, it's funny because it's always measured to me by the bottles. You know, like if it's, you know, on the weekends I might have some wine. I will have some wine. And aren't I adorable? And you know, it's always like if I have less than a bottle, I feel okay. But as soon as I crack that threshold of having more than a bottle, I feel really bad about myself, and I'm like, you've gone too far, Plagakis.
Mm-hmm.
Reel
mm-hmm.
it back
and,
in. To me, it is about quantity.
Someone said, one of the people I was speaking with in the last few weeks, they talked about someone who, you know, they met at a meeting, and when they were trying to get sober, and this woman was like, I'm, you know, so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic, and she had 1 glass of wine a day. And it was like, that's ridiculous. Like, you're not an alcoholic. And until she said, but I spend the other 23 hours of the day thinking about that 1 glass of wine. And that's just it. Like, it's the thinking about it, right? It's the thinking and the planning and the mental preparation and the exhausting, you know, mental planning around everything towards that drinking, that one drink. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be you have a DUI or you've had your family taken away or you've lost your job or whatever. It can be one drink a day and you're still an alcoholic. So it's such I find that such an interesting, you know, I talk about that with people I talk to, like, you know, what was your drinking amount? And then what's the language you use around it? Because those two things are very unique to each person who's in addiction or recovery.
It's so interesting because a lot of the pop culture references we have to alcoholism, you hear these crazy stories about people in the record industry, or you see things in movies where they're just belligerent or they're disrupting relationships in such like an outbound way. And to hear that it's simply not like that for everybody is incredibly interesting. Mm-hmm. And you found that this is common for people?
Yeah, I think, every story is so unique, and how you got to that point of like, I don't want to do this anymore, right? You know, it doesn't have to be some huge implosion of your life. And, you know, that's what I always try to reiterate is like, you know, and in my head, even when I started saying in my recovery, like, I'm an alcoholic. Like I didn't believe it at first because I grew up with the stereotypes of what an alcoholic is and what that looks like. And I was like, I'm not that. Like I'm not living on the street. I'm, you know, I have a good government job. I have my kids and my family. Like I couldn't possibly be that, you know, but I am. So that's where I just thought, like, we need to talk about this more because it's so the misunderstandings and misconceptions around, you know, what that looks like because of what we see in, the movies and whatnot. It's really misunderstood.
It's totally misunderstood, especially, you know, when you say, oh, well, that woman was only having a glass of wine a day. But like you said, it was the only thing she thought about all day long. You think of someone who is an alcoholic who wakes up with, who's concealing a hangover pretty much all day trying to get to that 5 o'clock drink every day or whatever it is. So that's eye opening to me too, because I have family members who have struggled with alcoholism and my mother in particular, she loved her wine most definitely. And she kind of hit rock bottom when my children were born and she went into rehab and she didn't have a drink until she died basically for like 16 or 17 years. But she was, She was a wine drinker who would drink until she basically fell asleep every day. And, and it was only at nighttime and she would have a bottle or more. She used to use alcohol as a form of currency with us, the kids. If I wanted the car, which I always wanted as a teenager, I had to go to the store to buy her a bottle of wine at the local dépanneur when I turned 18. And cigarettes, of course. And then if I did that, I would always get the car. So we always had this transactional relationship. But yeah, she was a very sloppy drunk. And that's how I think about, alcoholism is that it's certainly not a pretty disease.
But, no. And you bring up a point there there's a whole side of the addiction in the family, too. And when I thought about, like, moving forward, what do I want? How do I want to live my life? I thought, I don't want my kids to ever see me drunk. And like that was, and they'll never remember, like this point, they'll never remember me drunk. Like I was at some points around them, or at least like cocktail, but they will never remember that at their ages now. They're 6 and 8. So they'll never remember that 3 years ago. So I feel really happy in that, but then worried at the same time that I've passed something along to them, unlike in my family, I will have those conversations with them when it's the right time to talk openly about myself and then what potentially they could be susceptible to.
Did you use the word cocktail?
Looking back at those moments. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you say cocktailed?
Yeah.
I love that you use it as a verb. So it's not,
you're like feeling good, you're not drunk. I had stages. There's cocktailed, after maybe 2-3 glasses of wine. And then there's like belligerently drunk where I'm going home with someone and I have no idea what their name is.
Oh, we're going to talk about that in a second, but Hillary had a question.
So going back to your decision to quit drinking, it doesn't sound like there was a full implosion, just you didn't like where your life was headed. But how did alcohol affect your relationships? You spoke very openly about how it maybe kept you from being as involved with your children as you would have liked. What about in your marriage and with your family? Did it ever affect those relationships?
Absolutely. It's interesting because you think, it didn't directly, like I never got fired. I know like that, these types of things, because I showed up later, I smelled like alcohol. But alcohol, it's this, once you remove it, you realize the impact it had on you as a human, which then impacted relationships. So it's not just me when I was drunk and what I was doing. It's how alcohol was having an effect on who I was as a human. And so even when I wasn't drinking, how I was behaving in these relationships. So my selfishness, and you, like, I mean, all addicts are incredibly selfish, but the selfishness that I had for so long, I lost a relationship with my sister for 3+ years that only was repaired once I got sober and was able to look back and go, oh, it was me. Like, it wasn't her fault. It was me. And I apologized, and we rebuilt a relationship, but we didn't talk for 3 years. And that was so damaging to my mom, the kids. We both have kids. She's in Ottawa. Like, you know, it was 3 years I lost because of my own behavior. I lost a best friend because I would just call people out and, you know, it totally disregarding my role in everything. Right. So I lost relationships. I've been lucky to be able to repair them, and I've made my amends to people. But I just am going through a separation. I'm 6 months into a separation from my husband. So I think that if I had still been drinking, we probably would still be together, eventually probably get divorced. But I think that it's happening a little sooner because, again, I've removed what was covering everything up. And, you know, again, it's 3 years since I stopped drinking. But it takes time to kind of, you know, reveal those things and whatnot. So I think it's definitely been a covering element to it. And I think, you know, it takes time for those, you know, for kind of the beer goggles to come up or the wine, the rosé glasses to come up. And you go, okay, this is what this isn't working in my life anymore and what I need to change.
So can I go back to when you were in your 20s? And when you were drinking, because I used alcohol when I was in my early 20s, late teens, as a way. I mean, let me put it to you this way. I couldn't have sex with a guy unless I was drinking. I didn't I didn't have sex sober for probably 5 or 6 years until after I became sexually active. I was unable to have sex sober. I don't know if that's normal or not, but that's the way it was for me. What was your relationship with alcohol and sex?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I wonder if that's normal too. Like, I'm so curious of other people's experiences because I just assumed everyone, you know, had sex when they were drunk and that was pretty much the only time. That was my, you know, now that you say that and I think about it, until I got sober and was still married, you know, so for the last, you know, 3 years, like, I don't think I ever had sex sober, ever. Like, from the first time up through to 3 years ago. Like, that's just crazy to think about.
Really?
So that was really scary to start thinking, okay, like, even though I've been married to this person for, it was like 7 years, how am I going to do this? How am I going to have, why would you just do that if you're sober? You know? How do you launch into that? How do you start? It was just so many questions, but then it was fine. It's like in sobriety, everything is a first. You've got to get through it. And then you realize it's fine. You have nothing to worry about: a concert, a wedding, a funeral, whatever, a Saturday, a Wednesday, whatever. You get through these things and you realize, oh yeah, that's fine. I can do it. So I realized it was fine. You know, it was a silly thing to worry. Maybe not a silly thing to worry about, but a big deal because I'd never done it before.
Once it dawns on you that you're like having sex drunk all the time, it gets in your head. I remember it getting in my head, and I remember thinking, how come I'm only having sex when I've had a couple of drinks? And I don't know the answer to that, but probably because I was, you know, I had body image issues, and that's a whole other conversation. But Hillary, what about you? Were you like that too?
No, sorry. That was not my experience. In my teens, like, I was not a big drinker at all in my teens or into my 20s, really, at all. It wasn't until I met you, Sandra, that I
that we started having sex drunk. What?
No, I honestly wasn't a big drinker. I fell in love with a guy I went to school with. So we were always around each other in times when drinking wasn't necessarily a thing, and he was never a big drinker. And then my next serious relationship was with a guy who was probably never sober when he and I had sex, because he was a big weed smoker, but he wasn't much of a drinker and I wasn't a weed smoker. So it just, like, it never became a real issue.
That's so funny because I grew up, you know, my formative years, as they say, were spent in Montreal, and everybody was just doing drugs. Everybody was drunk all the time. I didn't know anybody who didn't. And I certainly didn't. My social circle was all clubs and nightclubs and partying mm-hmm. and after hours bars and all of that stuff and making one poor decision after another. And, you know, I always felt that I was doing it right. Now I look back and I'm like, what if I had gone a totally different direction and met one person that, you know, didn't party? What would life mm-hmm. have been like then? You know, it's the people you surround yourself with, and you know, you get
exactly.
caught. You totally get caught up in it. But you know what's weird? And I will say this: I have two people in my life who don't drink. My best friend Deb, she is not a drinker, and my sister, and they are not drink like it. And when I met Deb years ago, and she told me she didn't drink, I thought that was the craziest fucking thing I'd ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what? And I thought she was an alcoholic. I'm like, oh, honey, do you want to talk about it? And she said, she said, no. She said, I just don't like it. I don't like the mm-hmm. taste. I'm like, you don't like the taste? Nobody likes the taste. You get used to the taste. Don't worry about the taste, right?
But you know what blows my mind about you guys talking about having sex drunk is the reason it was never really a thing for me is because drinking makes me super friggin' lazy, and I don't want to be bothered. Like, that would be my biggest issue with drinking constantly is I get lazy and like I'd never get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now I care about that. Then it was just like, okay, who am I gonna get, you know, hop into bed with this weekend? It wasn't a successful weekend if I hadn't slept with some, you know, random loser. So I mean, like, I think, like, you know, you go back to what you said a minute ago, Sandra, like, what you're too, it's your surroundings, right? So like, I look back and I go, why was I never in a relationship in my 20s? Like, oh well, because of what I was doing and who I was, like, my behavior and who I was surrounding myself with. There was no way I was going to attract a nice, you know, moderate drinker with what I was doing. So of course, you know, there was no option. It was just these terrible one night stands when I was always drunk, because that's the only situation I was putting myself in. So like, I look back and I kind of go, I wish I'd made some other decisions, because I made a lot of bad ones. But at the same time, I probably wouldn't be where I am today without those. So
yeah. Well, Jesus Christ, you and I have the same story. I'm hearing your story. I'm like, God.
are you thinking that the promiscuity and the excitement surrounding that was part of the addiction as well? Or is that totally separate?
No, I think it's part of it. And I think a lot of addicts and anyone in addiction or recovery, kind of, you start taking off the layers and you're like, oh yeah, I also, you know, I have a lot of, like, it's compulsive things probably. And a lot of, like, you know, the addictive personality is somehow linked in there. And you go, oh yeah, like, I wonder if, you know, now that I look back at my behavior, and obviously that stopped when I was married, but now I'm single again. So I'm like, good. Like, do I have to worry about that kind of behavior coming back out? Like, I'm not drinking, but is it still there? And so you peel those layers back and you're like, oh yeah, I'm probably should be going to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous too. And
but, yeah.
I meet social media compulsion. Every day something shows up from Amazon that I've forgotten I've ordered, like, and I'm never drunk. So like, you know, a shopping addict, like, I think it's a lot of it is linked. There's like an addictive, I probably have a pretty addictive personality, but absolutely, I think there's a sex and love addiction component in there. So I haven't quite gotten down to like what I was looking for by doing all that. But now as I come into that again, that option, I'm like, I'm a little wary of like my decision-making abilities, even sober, you know?
Absolutely. I feel like we're the same person. And, you know, I've heard that before about, you know, with, you know, alcoholism or any kind of addiction, once you kick your addiction, that it has to be replaced with something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, so you need to keep your eyes open too. I mean, I don't feel like shopping is the worst thing you could do, honestly.
I know. And that's why I don't try to punish myself for like all the candy I keep in the house. Like, I don't, you know, I'm just like, this is the least bad thing I could be doing. So.
Right. Did you, when you were in your 20s and you were making all your poor drunken decisions, as many of us were in our 20s, did it ever dawn on you that you might be an alcoholic, or were you so immersed in, you know, being a 20-something person. And, you know, I mean, when you're in your 20s, you're infallible and you don't think about those things. But did you?
No, never. And I've never thought about that before. And like, at some point I was like, I don't drink the same. Like, why doesn't, what is more their fault than me having a problem? You know, like, why doesn't everyone drink like me? But no, it was too chaotic. There was always something going on. I never had the time to, I never was reflected on it. And I never, I don't think I wanted to realize. I think I enjoyed living a chaotic, it was so selfish, you know, it was just so unbelievably selfish. And it was only in my late 20s when I got married and started, you know, that lifestyle calmed down, that it was like, oh, this is still going on. You know, like, oh, I still need to drink every day. That's when it was kind of like, but it wasn't like, I'm an alcoholic. Even when I started going to meetings and you have to say, I'm Becca, I'm an alcoholic. I was like, I'm not, I'll just say it because I'm here. You know, like, you, even at that point, I was like, nah.
You weren't there yet, huh?
So going back to your relationships, we've heard a little bit about how alcoholism affected your relationships when you were drinking. And now we're at a time where you've been sober for 3 years. Making that transition, how did that affect your relationships? People that you had been drinking with before, your friendships, and even the relationship with your husband?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think... friends, you know, in my like mid to late 30s, I surrounded myself with good people who were super supportive. And even one who's been with me the whole ride, we went away on a trip 3 months into my sobriety, which is like terribly risky of her to want to be alone with me on a plane 3 months sober. But, you know, she was so supportive. And now she's celebrating 1 year without drinking, not because she's an alcoholic, but because just, you know, she saw that I could do it and wanted to try it out herself. So like I had good people in my life at that point. I think it'd be a lot different if I was in my 20s trying to do that, with maybe not so solid of friendships and relationships. My sister, who's a big part of my life again, doesn't, you know, almost never drinks. My dad had to stop drinking because of a surgery. So like I'm sort of surrounded by people who aren't, it's not our life anymore. So it was okay. With my now ex-husband, he wasn't drinking at the time anyway. So it didn't, you know, it was fine. It was okay. Me stopping drinking only became a benefit to everyone around me because I stopped being such a complete a-hole. Like, and you know, everyone else was on board with that.
So. Yeah, totally. Did you, when you were drinking your 1 to 3 glasses of wine every night while you were married, was it a problem for him to see you drink every night? Or was it just
because,
right? Because you weren't like you said, this ugly, sloppy, belligerent drunk. You were just cocktailing a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, I could be. I definitely there were times when I got drunk and embarrassed him for sure. And I was, you know, I remember going to the kitchen and seeing like there was enough left in that bottle that I could fill up a third or fourth glass on a weeknight, and trying to do it quietly so we wouldn't hear it in the other room. You know, like that doesn't scream a red flag. I don't know what does, but right. You know, I was not hiding bottles, but I was trying to hide that extra drink at night. And, you know, I don't know if he really, like, if it bothered him too much, like I don't recall him ever talking to me about it, but I don't think he liked it that I like, you know, was having that every night. So, but we didn't talk about it. You know, that was another problem because I would have been super unreceptive to that and really defensive. So I don't blame him for not wanting to address that.
I feel like everybody who partakes in cocktails has like hard limits. You know, like I feel like I know when I would have gone too far. For example, before I feel like is that Hillary laughing? Okay, hold on. Just hear me out because I want to confess. Okay, you shut the fuck up. All right, listen. Listen. Okay, before Christmas, I was so stressed. Christmas has a way of doing that to me. Christmas gives me the shits because I get all stressed out about all that's happening. And even though it's a COVID year and I wasn't going anywhere, I still gave myself the shits like I always do. And like 2 weeks before Christmas, I was having one or two glasses of wine every night. And I never drink during the week, like ever, because I do a morning show and I can't come into work with a foggy head. It's not good for business.
It's impossible. You can't function.
You can't. Yes, radio has had its share of alcoholics, but they've been shitty broadcasters because they've had foggy brains, and you can't pull that off on the regular, in my opinion. I don't think you could anyway. So I have a real strict rule with myself that I do not drink when I'm working because I can tell. But I was for 2 weeks before Christmas having like a glass or two of wine every night just to relax me. And I felt like I got caught up a little bit for 2 weeks and I did not like myself. I was foggy on the air. I'd do a show. I'd be like, you know what? I wasn't as sharp as I normally could be. I could feel it. And I didn't.
Well, and you start to worry, like you start to have to check with yourself, like, is this the problem? Like if you get into a bad habit, and as long as you can pull yourself away, then I think you're fine. But it's so easy for something that is nothing to turn into something, I think.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
And Hillary, I use Christmas as an excuse and the stress of it. And I thought, well, Christmas is going to come and then I'm going to be in lockdown for 10 days and I'm not. Mm-hmm. I had the holidays off. I was drinking more than I was drinking a lot. And I felt like a piece of shit every single day. Mm-hmm. I was never more excited to come back to work last week ever because I'm like, good, it can stop. And I still, you know, obviously I'm not drinking anymore. But it's so easy to get caught up into this little world of excuses. Oh, it's Christmas. Oh, I'm just a little stressed. Oh, I need a drive. You know, there's just fucking a million reasons you tell
there's
yourself.
There's always a reason. There's always
and
a reason.
No,
to drink.
Yeah.
And
it's no different.
Like, because it's everywhere too, you know, and there was just like a campaign of like the orange juice that was directed at like hiding and having like a mimosa in your closet, you know, like for parents who are stuck home with kids. And you just think like this terrible messaging, you know, that, you know, there's always a reason that you're stuck at home with the kids. It's Christmas. It's January. It's, you know, I'm going away up to the Dominican. Like there's always a reason to drink until you just take yourself out of that and go, I can not just not drink. Like there's, you know, I can get through it without alcohol, but alcohol is just part of every single, now there's sipping fees, right? For like having a newborn, like there's just alcohol is everywhere.
What is it?
A sip and see. So you can introduce your newborn while everyone gets drunk.
Jesus Christ.
It's like a baby shower, but it's for both sexes. But normally you don't talk about booze being at a baby shower.
Yeah.
No.
Except that it is now, right? Even at the baby shower, it's there at the, you know, at everything it's there. And you know, like women who have like the first thing they want to do after they give birth is have a glass of wine or champagne, like in the hospital. And you just think it's sort of confusing messaging because I took that as like, oh, well, everyone needs to drink all the time, you know, and that mommy drinks wine culture is so dangerous because I use that as a crutch and an excuse and to rationalize my drinking for a long time, too.
Yeah. And, you know, it's part of my fucking brand that, you know, I like wine and I like to hang out with the ladies and drink wine. But you're right. It is dangerous messaging when you normalize that behavior because it's one thing to say, oh, I like wine and I like hanging out with the girls. But, you know, in moderation, too, I like to hang out with my girlfriends once in a while and drink wine. But I'm sure I'm not getting sloshed every night because the fuck is that? Right. I can't pull it. I can't pull it off and do my job. But I will say this. I feel really concerned over how many people I have spoken to who say they drink every day because of COVID. And now they're locked in. And you want to talk about an excuse to drink? It's a goddamn pandemic.
Exactly.
So how many
how
many people are struggling right now? It makes you wonder.
Yeah, well, I mean there was a period during COVID where I was hitting the wine pretty hard and Chris and I had a conversation and we decided to shut it down because it is so easy to lose yourself in that because there's nowhere else to go. So you lose yourself in a bottle of wine.
Yeah. When was that, Hillary? Was that beginning?
It was like a few months ago. Like probably close to the end of the summer that I was at home with the kid. Like it's just stress related, right? It's such a bad time to really get into those habits because it's so easy to get lost. And unlike, you know, you eat junk food every night, eventually it starts showing on your ass. Wine doesn't necessarily do that. And so it's very easy to feel like there are no consequences until the consequences are so big.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's so, it's, you know, it's so easy to get into that habit of like, especially when every day it's Groundhog Day, right? Like you're, there's no change to anything and there's no end in sight. You're just like, well, I might as well, you know, it provides that, that excuse, right?
Yeah. So I'm like thinking about that now, thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, you know, in the summertime when we all, this summer in particular, most of us struggled with, you know, lockdowns and all of that. Yeah, Hillary, I hear where you're coming from about the drinking. I mean, we all drink a little too much in the summer, for sure, because, you know, of the barbecues and whatever. But this year we drank for different reasons, really, you know? There weren't any outdoor barbecues to go to. It was just outdoor sad drinking.
Well, and it was all, it's all that stuff like, oh, I deserve it because I'm stressed out. No, or not. Like, maybe buy yourself something mental. Pretty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Becca, why did you start the podcast? I meant to ask you that because, I mean, I follow you on Twitter and I see that, I mean, I don't know. It's so bizarre because you all of a sudden have become very prominent in my feed and I don't know why. You're all up in my Twitter business. I don't
No complaining about that.
So why did you start this podcast? And but before that, why did you decide to make this announcement? Because it's been years since you actually stopped drinking from the time that you started the podcast and publicly made this declaration. Why is the question?
I guess I sound like a town crier. You know, I went out to the square.
Yes. Yes, you did. But yes, you did. And it was glorious.
So there was a few components to it. Part of it was I felt like I was keeping this secret, you know, more than a secret about my drinking. Cause that's the funny part is no one was bothered by like my alcohol consumption over years and years. Everyone, you know, was aware of that, but no one ever, you know, said anything. But then I stopped drinking and I would say, you know, like, oh, I don't drink anymore. I used to or whatever, but I never said like, oh yeah, no, none for me. I'm an alcoholic. No thanks. You know, cause we don't say that, but I was in recovery and, you know, 3 years in and I, you know, for me had made all these amazing changes to my life. I, especially with the relationship with my sister coming back and being able to apologize for things. Like I was never wrong in my entire life before this. Like now it's like, oh, I can see my role in it. And I would, you know, I'm quick to apologize most of the time for no reason. I just want to get it out there. So I was really proud of who I'd become, but I couldn't really say why, because we don't talk about recovery. We don't talk about being an alcoholic. You just say like, I don't drink, but it, you know, saying that I just thought that's not really the truth. And I started to get kind of almost annoyed with that, but I couldn't be sharing it. And then Bobby Ryan, who is, an Ottawa senator at the time, in March, it came out that he had gone to the Players Association substance abuse program.
Yes.
And I wrote a letter to the editor in March of the Ottawa Sun saying, thank you, Bobby. You know, thank you for being open about this. Thank you for sharing. You're not alone. You know, you've got fans who support you, fans who are in the exact same situation you are. I'm an alcoholic, but it was anonymous. I left it anonymous because I thought there's no way I'm putting my name to that. And then he won in September the Masterson Trophy for, you know, goes to a player who shows dedication and perseverance. And he spoke again about why that year was so important and the alcohol addiction that he, you know, had gone through and come out the other side. And he had so much support. And I just thought, you know, damn it. Like there's no reason why he can talk about this and I can't. And so I posted to Twitter. I basically started a Twitter account, posted to Twitter that article or the letter to the editor that I written. I said, I'm not in the shadows anymore. This is me. Like I wrote this and I'm not ashamed to say it now. And I went up doing an interview on CBC Ottawa Morning and just that's kind of how it started. And, you know, saying it out loud felt so good. I felt free. I felt finally who I was. And then I just thought there's more to this. Like I got to keep talking about this because why was I so afraid to say openly I'm an alcoholic because of the shame and stigma that surround it and the misunderstandings of what an alcoholic looks like. And I just thought if I can make a difference with doing one thing in my life, then this is going to be it. And somehow the idea of a podcast is born. I've always had like a little love for, you know, celebrities. So I have combined my two passions I just thought, I'm going to start talking to people who are sober, who have a platform and can hopefully help spread this message, and who are, you know, obviously are open about their sobriety. And it just kind of went from there. I was really lucky to get one person from Below Deck, actually, to talk to me and be my first guest. And from there, you know, it legitimized it, and it's kind of gone from there. So I just, I can't believe who I've been able to speak with in the last few months and who I have coming up. Like, I can't believe, like, this little, you know, idea, how it's grown to be where it is today.
Once you publicly declare that you are an alcoholic on Twitter and in your circle, but beyond that, how did it affect the people you work with, for example?
Well,
maybe that's a weird way to ask the question, but do you know what I mean? Like, what was their reaction is what I should have asked.
Yeah. And I was worried I hadn't really said to people at work anything. Like, I had told one friend, like, offhanded, like, randomly over the summer in a conversation, just kind of blurted it out. Most people in my life knew, but people at work, I was a little worried about, like, how they'd find out. But I felt like the way I'd done it and the what I was doing with it was so going to be so beneficial to so many people that, like, no one's going to come down on me for that, you know? Like, I don't think – and everyone knows – me for years now, so you know me, you know, they know my truly who I am. So I thought they might be surprised, but, you know, the reaction was wonderful from everyone. You know, strangers, long lost acquaintances, people reached out to me and said, I had no idea, you know, I just thought you loved your wine. I'm like, I did. That was the problem. So, you know, I had it's 99% been fantastic. Every now and then some weirdo on Twitter will say something, but otherwise in my life, everyone has been so wonderful.
Yeah. Everybody has a weirdo on Twitter. Don't worry about that. That's
par for the Sandra course. Is that weirdo on Twitter, by the way. So we are a couple of weeks into dry January. What do you think about different sort of plans they have, like this, like dry January? Some people do dry February. I usually do November, which did not happen this year. But what do you think about these campaigns to take a break from alcohol?
You know, I think it's a good idea. The essence of it is a good idea, because ultimately I think you'd want people to get through that month and realize that they can do it. Right? Like, because in a month, like, you're faced with Tuesday and, you know, kids, especially now, right? Like, with everyone home, you realize you can get through these things. So I think that the idea of it is really good if you can make it through, because that's what my friend did. Is she went a month and then just thought, well, I could do that. I'll just do another month. You know, you realize you can get through stuff without alcohol. So I think that's the general idea of it. I think if you have a, like, really big consumption of alcohol, you know, doing that is one, dangerous, just stopping. But two, you know, there's always going to, unless you, like, kind of combine that with, like, maybe talking to someone or starting a program, you're not going to get anywhere. It's not going to, I mean, so again, it just totally depends on the person's intake of it and where they're at with it.
If you had a message that you want to convey to anybody right now who might be listening right now and might be struggling, like you were, what would you say to them?
I'd say talk to someone, because I didn't for a long time. I read books. I Googled things. I avoided talking to anyone and expressing my worry and my concern about maybe I had a problem. And I think if I'd done that sooner, I would have gotten help sooner, or at least known what the help was out there. Anyone can reach out to me. But talk to anyone you trust if you think you have a problem. You know, the best thing to do is talk to someone.
I really appreciate that, Becca. What's your handle on Twitter?
It's at @unashamedalc, unashamed alc.
And your podcast is on all places where podcasts are found?
Exactly. And I also have a website, and all the episodes are there too. It's if you just Google the Unashamed Alcoholic, you'll get there.
Becca,
thank you so much for joining us today on the Quick and the Dirty podcast. It was an eye-opening conversation, and definitely makes you think.
This episode is over, but the conversation doesn't have to be. Follow Hillary and Sandra on social. Instagram @HillaryOnAir, @SandraKiss1053, Twitter @HillaryWelch, @SandraKiss1053, and on Facebook @QuickAndDirtyPodcast. Got a question? Email Hillary and Sandra, thequickandthedirty@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can download the podcast each week to your mobile device to listen offline. Find The Quick and the Dirty on frequencypodcastnetwork.com, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts.